Welcome to the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast, where you'll get actionable tips and advice on major gifts, direct response fundraising, legacy giving, and much more from leading experts in the nonprofit sector. Now, here are your hosts of the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast, Andrew Olson and Roy Jones.
Hey, this is Andrew Olson with the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast. I'm coming to you today from beautiful Palm Springs, California at the CityGate Network Conference. And I'm here with two special guests. So my guest co-host for the week is my good friend Sean Saunders from Dickerson Baker Associates. Sean, good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here again.
Awesome, man. And we're really excited. We have a special guest with us today, Danny Bethune from Union Gospel Mission Dallas. Danny, we're so grateful that you're here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Super excited to talk to you today. And we've got a great lineup of questions. Before we jump into that, give our listeners just a quick understanding of who you are, what you do, and who Union Gospel Mission Dallas is.
Oh, yeah. So Union Gospel Mission Dallas is a homeless shelter in Dallas, Texas. We serve homeless men, women, and children in two locations. We have our Calvert Place, which serves homeless men. And then we have the Center of Hope, which serves the homeless children, and then homeless women, and then women with children. Last year alone, we served close to 4,000 homeless men, women, and children in Dallas, Texas. A little bit about myself: I am a 16-year veteran in fund development. Have raised funds for numerous organizations and for numerous causes in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
So the first question I want to ask you comes out of a conversation that we all had yesterday. So you were sharing with us about some of the successes that you've had engaging with foundations and corporate partners in the community. And that's an area where a lot of rescue missions have interest in going, but not many of them have started yet, or they've not been able to really scale up a program like that. Talk to us a little bit about how you approach those kind of organizations and what you've seen to be the most successful way to engage them.
Yeah, so I think number one, we have to realize that there's a Christian somewhere. So in all these organizations and foundations and corporations that you work with, there is someone like you there. I think the next thing about it is that you can't be shy or shy away from it, because at the end of the day, you're serving people. And that's what the gist of your work is. And that's what other foundations and corporations want to do. They want to help people too.
What I hear, which is, I think, different from the way a lot of people in the nonprofit sector at large think about this, is you focused on the people, right?
Right.
I think a lot of times I hear people saying, development officers saying things where you know, the foundation or the corporation are seen as the big entity, right?
And
it's almost like an anonymous organization that they're trying to break into and treat it like this big monster, when really you're saying it's all about the people who inhabit the organization more than anything else. Is that right?
Definitely. I mean, somebody had to write the check. And so there has to be a person who's behind that screen, like behind the Wizard of Oz screen, like writing the check, right? So yeah, there is a person that definitely is going to answer the phone when you call. I've learned to call people late in the day.
Okay.
That's when I get a lot of phone calls instead of early in the morning. I call around a 3:30, 4 o'clock time frame, because people are somewhat trying to leave work, but they don't know if it's an emergency phone call. So they'll kind of pick up at that time. And so that's kind of been my way of getting into it. But you can't be afraid. That's, I think, the one thing about it. As Christians that do mission work, why are we fearful? God doesn't call us to be fearful. So why are we exhibiting fearful ways and work that we know that's helping to build God's kingdom? It's contradictory to what we're doing. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, so we can't shy away from it.
Do you feel like there's a difference in the way you build the relationship with an individual who's a corporate or a foundation partner versus a individual donor?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all. Not at all. So I just think about, I recently went on a trip and I talked to a very large major donor, but I also talked to a foundation. I told both of them what I was going to be doing on the trip. I told them my own fear as a part of the trip. And both of them then said, we'll pray for you.
Okay.
So there was no difference in my conversation with the foundation director and with this major donor that I was talking to as well. I don't think there's a difference at all. I think we, again, fear makes us approach it as it's different, but it's not. It's people. And I always think about it like this. We're building relationships every day. I mean, you can build a relationship with somebody you see at the grocery store, somebody that's working with you in the building, one of your clients. It's happening every day. Why do we then try to use a different tactic when it comes to relationship building, when it's all the same? It's getting to know people, getting to know their interests, getting them to know you and what you like, and then seeing where you find common ground.
So that's also different than what I think, you know, a lot of folks assume the way to engage with a foundation is, which is, you know, a lot of organizations just sort of unsolicited send off a grant request, right? And hope that someone somewhere in the ether will find it right. And say, wow, this is amazing. I have to fund this.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that's the way it happens. And I think you have a perspective on that.
Yeah, I do. Definitely. Yeah. So I don't believe in blind solicitations. It's a waste of time. You have so much limited time in nonprofit because you're doing so many different things as maybe the only person in your department, only two people in your department. You can't turn around and say, I'm just going to send out 10, 15 applications and hopefully, fingers crossed, something would happen. No, I believe that you should always contact the foundation, yeah. Contact the corporation, email, get somebody to respond back to you before you then submit the application. It serves you better. Number one, they're going to give you advice about what you should write and submit. So that way you're not wasting time trying to figure out what should I write or submit. And number two, they now are expecting your application. So there was a funder in Dallas that I reached out to and I let her know about my trip I was going on. And when I got back, I'm like, I'm back. And she was like, okay, awesome. When she wrote an email to me, she said, Danny, I sent this to you before we released it to the general public. So I got the information before the general public even received information about the grant process. So she's looking for us to make a submission. So you do. You need to call them, reach out, contact them in some way before you submit an application.
So one of the other things that we talked about that I think would be interesting for our listeners is your approach to you know, major gift work. And this is another area where a lot of organizations in the homeless service space, whether rescue missions or other types of organizations, they tend to struggle, mm-hmm. right? Because to be candid, direct mail has allowed a lot of organizations to exist, yeah. mm-hmm. and you know, have
they get to hide behind closed doors. Right? Yeah, definitely.
And so not a lot of organizations in your space have really developed what I would consider and what Sean would probably call like a best practice major gift program. But you seem to have figured that out. So I'd love to hear, and one of the big questions that we hear from rescue missions is, or statements is, well, our donors aren't major donors, right? We rescue mission donors don't give big gifts. They give $2.29 per meal, you know? And so we don't have those people that like a university or a hospital might have. Is that a mentality that you had to fight against when you came to the mission? Or did they already embrace, you know, kind of the approach that you have?
No, it's a mentality, right? That we're so used to people giving the food sometimes in mm-hmm. the mission space. We have this $2.69 mentality about what a donor will do. But I think something that Sean and his group are doing, I think, which is good, is that mm-hmm. you got to know the capacity of your donors. So let's not assume that the person who's been given a $2.69 gift every month can only do that. We need to really look at our data and look at our donors to say, what can they give? Because there are a lot of hidden gems laying in databases and Excel spreadsheets of our mission donors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So can you give us any examples of sort of those hidden gems that you've found in the last couple of years while you've been at the mission?
Yeah. So I would say some hidden gems are my board members.
Huh. Say more about that.
Yeah. Our board, I mean, literally that's your first major donors right there are your board members. Those are your major donors. You should be working them first, building a relationship with them, because as they get more engaged in the organization, guess what they'll do? They'll bring their friends. And that's what we've learned kind of at Union Gospel Mission Dallas, is that we engaged our board members more. And from that, they have really been helping us with our major gifts, because they've been bringing their friends over, okay. and we've been conducting tours with their friends. When the friends come over, they know that we're asking for money. So there is no qualms about it. We know. But we also created a program called UGM Family Partners.
Okay.
And through that program, we're asking donors to engage their family in our fundraising and in our organization. So we ask them to make a 3-year commitment. So we're getting them to make these pledges, mm-hmm. right? So we can get multi-year funding. And then we ask them to volunteer okay. as a family yeah. during the course of the year. And then we also ask them to come back and give us a perspective on what they think about homelessness. And then we present to them some issues we're battling and getting their advice on how we can manage that. Because a lot of these donors are successful business people too. So they yeah. have some great advice that can be used in the nonprofit sector. So,
and what's the public reception of that kind of program and approach been for you?
Oh, yeah, it's been great. So as a matter of fact, because of the UGM Family Partners, we were provided $1 million challenge grant. So we had a donor who told us he would give us $25,000 over a 3-year period.
Okay.
If we met the $1 million challenge grant as a part of this program, and we would get another $25,000. So we'd get another $75,000.
Huh.
So in the end, that donor would have made a $1.15 million donation to the organization just because of us starting this UGM Family Partners program. So
that sounds like pretty good return.
Hey, I think it is fabulous return, right? And so that has helped to engage our board members, right, in wanting to see us hit that mark. Huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And Danny, if I can ask you this question in terms of doing rescue mission work, because it sounds like you've worked at other nonprofits besides just rescue missions.
Yes.
Right? So what do you see challenges maybe when you came in, but particularly now? Are there challenges that and trends that you're seeing that are impacting your ability to raise funds?
Yeah, I think the trend that I'm seeing is that there are not a lot of good fundraisers out in the community.
Hmm.
So I think that is a trend, or that fundraisers are leaving the industry. So that is another trend you're saying. I have a lot of my friends are in the nonprofit sector. A lot of them have gotten out of the nonprofit sector either to kind of start their own consulting firms, or they've gone into a corporate entity. Hmm. So I think that's a trend I'm seeing, is that people are leaving. So it's hard to get good relationships being built if folks aren't willing to stay in the industry and help kind of do the work.
Yeah, and you know, another question about still on this same topic. Mm-hmm. I remember back in 2008, that was the year I got into fundraising. I was out of sales and got my first fundraising job. And, you know, we all know what happened in 2008. But one of the things, it wasn't challenging for me because the stats were showing, in those things like Chronicle Philanthropy, having articles saying that the giving to social service organizations hadn't dipped from major donors, you know, and that changed the foundation game for sure. But the giving didn't go down, the social service organizations, even then. Now that we're in this prosperous time, I guess the question is, are you seeing something that would be opposite from that, or more people given to non-social service? Are you seeing giving go down in any way? I guess that's the question.
Yeah, I think you're seeing a lot more competition. So that's what you're seeing, right?
Yeah.
You're seeing you're battling against a lot more competition in the industry for dollars.
Yeah.
So I think about in Dallas, I think there's over 2,500 nonprofit organizations in Dallas. And so you're competing against those 2,500 plus those that are in your field, in your line of business,
right,
as well. So I think if there's a trend, it's a trend that more people are coming, more nonprofits are stepping into this fundraising, needing money role. So we're competing more for dollars than we are than against anything else. And at the end of the day, there's plenty for everybody.
Yeah.
There's plenty for, there are a lot of people in the community that have money that we don't know.
Right.
Because they're not giving it out. So, right. So we got to figure out kind of how do we get our existing donors to give more, but also them connecting us to their friends that they know are not givers.
That's right. You know, and those two go hand in hand. Like with the major gifts reps I coach, I say, you know, yeah, we're going to grow your portfolio of donors to current donors.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways we're going to do that is we're going to get them to introduce their friends. So I'm doing acquisition.
Right.
Because when they, as you know, when they do that, when they're introducing their friends and bringing them for tours and things like that,
right,
they're giving many times will go up
without
you even asking.
Right.
You know, because they've got more stake in it. So, it, you know, we can streamline these things. Another question, I think you would agree with me that fundraising requires a certain element of creativity and innovation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just some of the challenges that we've talked about already. But with those things, there can be risk. You know, what are some of the things maybe you've tried, Danny, in the last couple of years that was risky, and what did you learn from it?
Yeah, so I have worked at several organizations. So I've worked at the Salvation Army. So that's a Christian organization. I've worked at Big Brothers Big Sisters, which is not, and I've worked at Methodist Health System Foundation, which is a Christian hospital. So let's kind of just go there on the platform. What has been successful? You have to be innovative. you have no choice. I mean, you really have to be innovative. And I'm not saying this as innovative as chasing dollars,
right,
but innovative in the way you want to serve your clients. So at the hospital, we had a sexual assault nurse examiners program, which is basically providing kits to women who have been sexually assaulted when they come to the hospital. The one thing that was lacking was counseling. So you're helping the physical part of a woman, but you're not helping them emotionally. So right. One thing that we came up with, which was risky to do, and we're a hospital, so yeah, but we're not counselors. Hospitals are not counseling places. Yeah. One thing we do, we went to a couple of funders and asked them if they'd be willing to support a sexual assault counseling facility on the hospital's campus. Not normal.
Yeah.
Not normal at all, and risque in the sense that sexual assault is a very kind of, we don't want to talk about it, commerce. Yeah. Like, we don't want to talk about it. But it panned out very well. We ended up raising over $300,000 from a variety of foundations, and we just built on the funding, right? So as one foundation gave, we built on, we got this much money, help us get some more, and we just kept building upon that. So a risky thing to do, but it worked because it was something the hospital had never even tried before, never even thought of. They were like, what? Providing counseling? We help you physically. We don't help your mind, like, unless we're doing brain surgery. But other than that, we don't do it. So, yeah, something very out of the norm for a hospital. And it's out of the norm for that particular hospital to raise as much foundation funding as they had. It hadn't been done before. And Christian organization. We have to know that there is a Christian out there, and they're pulling and rooting for you, even if the foundation isn't one.
Yeah, you know, and the two that went along with that is there is a, as I talked about my workshop yesterday, there's someone else who's in charge ultimately, right? Mm-hmm. And even those who aren't Christians,
right?
Maybe, right? This could be an opportunity for them to get exposure to, like, this could be a gateway into Christianity, or it could just be they want to bless the community, you know, right?
Yeah.
But
the one thing I think some of the organizations that aren't Christian, and even if we keep saying how we're serving faith-based community and we're helping people understand the gospel of Jesus Christ, again, it comes back to people want to help people.
Yeah. That's right.
So they wanted to help the people. They could understand somebody being assaulted and then needed counseling afterwards. They could understand it, even if there was no biblical context to it.
Right.
They understood that piece. So
yeah,
I think it boils back down to that again. It's really about people. In every last organization I can think of that I've worked for, our clients have had similar barriers to being successful.
Right.
They all have barriers to being successful. Yeah. Every last one of them. And that's what nonprofits are doing. We're helping them to overcome those barriers to be successful, productive people. And like I always say, we're getting them back to God's purpose.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So last question I have, thank you for that. What tips or encouragement? Let's say we've got some listeners here and they're thinking about, hey, I'd like to start engaging more of the corporations and foundations in my area and really launching that element of a major gift fundraising effort. What tips or encouragement would you give to these that are thinking about this?
Yeah. So the first thing that I would say is be still and know that I am God. So first, listen, let go.
Psalm 46.
Yeah. Psalms 46:10. Let go. Let go and know that God is going to carry you. He has already given you everything you need to be successful. It's in you. Yeah. Use it.
Yeah.
Use what God has given you to be successful. Number two, you can't be fearful. Your clients are already living in a world of fear.
Yeah.
You can't be fearful with them. Wow. You have to be the bold one and move forward and reach out to these foundations and corporations.
Yeah.
Number three, find a friend. So if you're scared, find a friend. get a friend in the community that's doing similar work as you are and have somebody to kind of help encourage you. Because you're going to need it. And number four, make the call. Do it. Make the call. And not that you're making the call for yourself because it's not about you. Make the call for that client that you see every day that has three kids. She's been living in her car. She's struggling. Make the phone call for that man that's addicted to heroin and he's trying to get off. Make the phone call for the guy that you may see on the corner in your own neighborhood sometimes who needs help. That's who you're making the call for. Yeah. It's not for you.
Yeah, I hear you saying, you know, that make the mission the mission.
Make
the mission.
Make your mission the mission. Yeah. Let that be your driving force.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us today.
And thank you.
This was awesome. And I not just make the mission, but be bold.
Yeah.
I think that sums it up for me. I think that's a really powerful statement and recommendation to the community. So thank you, Danny, for being here.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
If somebody wants to get in touch with you to learn more from you or just to, you know, have a friend in the community.
Yes.
What's the best way for somebody to get in touch with you?
Yeah. So my Instagram, Twitter, no, I'm just kidding. You know how we all do that, right? Yeah, that's the way we all do it. No. Want to get in contact with me, you can email me at dbethune@ugmdallas.org. That's dbethune@ugmdallas.org.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast, brought to you exclusively by Newport One. Newport One can make a difference in your fundraising so that you can change the world. You can always reach us at podcast@newportone.com. Please take a moment to rate this episode on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. When you rate this episode, it will help more nonprofit leaders just like you to help find us and get the information that they need to raise more funds for their organization. Thanks again for listening today.